This podcast is brought to you by Bodog.net.
Don't miss a chance to play at Bodog.net. When the odds are stacked against you, post-game tastes that much sweeter. Bodog.net, your source of free casino games, poker strategies, and live sports odds.
Now back to In the Box on TSN 1200.
All right, it's 11:03. Second hour of the show is underway. Steve Lloyd, Chris Stevenson, new producer, Matt Conesvita. Kenny was working kind of a hybrid shift today, and now Kenny's on holiday. So Matty Vowles will steer us home the rest of the way today. And he'll be working a little bit into the next show, which will emanate live from TD Place as the Red Blacks are back home to the BC Lions tonight. It's a 7:30 kickoff on TSN 1200. AJ and Jeff Avery will have a call. We got a pregame show coming your way at 6. The NHL entry draft is 1 week from tonight for round 1, 2 through 7 on the Friday this year. We saw a significant trade already yesterday. Buyout window opens tomorrow. Things happening quickly now, and our guest is waiting patiently, so let's bring him right onto the line. And I think a lot of us were thinking a lot about, nostalgia here in Ottawa with the news of Daniel Alfredsson getting called to the Hall. And his very first NHL coach has been good enough to join us on the Gabriel Pizza Hotline. The original coach of the Ottawa Senators, it is Rick Bowness. Rick, good morning. How are you?
Good afternoon from Halifax. We're an hour later, so we're in the afternoon.
Oh.
Good morning.
All right, just flipped over. Good stuff. All right, so you're already back out home enjoying. Yeah, absolutely here. So let's not bury the lead here. When you heard that Alfie got the call to the Hall, give us your reaction.
Absolutely thrilled. Listen, it couldn't happen to a better person, and obviously a great player. But you like to see those guys. First of all, you come into the league, you're unheralded. And you know, if you go back to our first training camp with Alfie, he was supposed to start the year in the minors that year, not only for playing purposes to get him some experience, but as you recall, we didn't have a whole lot of money back then, and he was on a very low two-way contract. So he was ticketed for the minors. But, you know, we're not the smartest guys in the world, but it took us about two practices to realize this guy's the best player on the ice. And he's one of the hardest working guys. And then you watch him through the preseason, and you watch him every day, and you get to know him, and you spend some time talking to him, and you realize, A, he's a great player. You just watch him play. B, he's an incredibly competitive guy, absolutely fearless. And that was an era, I remember, when Swedes we weren't too sure how they were going to compete in North American hockey, and there were certainly no issues with Alfie on that. And then again, see, when you talk to him, you say, wow, this is a great guy and a great teammate. So, listen, I'm absolutely thrilled that he got in. He deserves it. And not only a great player, but a great person. And that's just as important when you go into something like the Hall of Fame.
And did he not show up for that camp, Rick, and he had forgotten his skates in Sweden? It seems to me like he started camp like in borrowed skates. And I think he said to me at one point, they were like two sizes too big. Like,
Well, I told you we were a low budget team then, man. We didn't have a lot of extra skates hanging around for these guys. that seems to ring a bell with him, but you know, something like that, you know, that wouldn't turn Alfie back. He'd just keep pushing forward. He came into camp to make it. He wanted to make a great impression, and there was nothing going to hold him back, and nothing did.
I'm just going to jump in here, Lloyd. So what are those conversations like back then with Alain Vigneault and the late E.J. McGuire, who we miss so much? Just as camp's cranking up, you guys are sitting in the coach's room, and you guys must have been like, who the hell is this Alfredsson guy?
Well, we were. But that's, I mean, after a couple of days, we're all looking at each other saying, this guy's starting the season here with us. He's going to make our team. We got to do everything we can to help him make our team because of all the attributes we just talked about. So those conversations, those are great conversations in terms of you're going into training camp and you hope someone is going to step up, an unknown is going to step up and really make an impression on the coaches and make the team. And Alfie was that guy from the first day of training camp. So Alain and EJ and I are looking at each other saying, okay, we got to figure out a way to make sure this guy starts the season with us because, again, he was the best player in training camp, and we had some guys that had been around the league a little bit and guys that were highly touted prospects. And for Alfie to come in as really an unknown and a long shot, you know, it's quite a tribute to him that, you know, we're talking about him playing with us right off the bat. And sure enough, listen, if you go back to his first season, you know, he was killing penalties. He was on the power play. Yeah. He was our top line right winger. So his minutes were up the first, you know, first opportunity we got to play him. His minutes were up probably 18, 20 minutes a game.
Well, and let's face it, Rick, you were kind of starving for some talent infusion, right? You're all right. I hope I got some. Who's this guy? Yeah, he looks pretty good. And you identified right away. Well, I think he can help us, and we need a guy.
That's the conversations we were having, man. We got to get some skill in here. We this guy has the skill. And just as important, man, he competes, right? He was absolutely fearless. Yeah. First on pucks, he was banging into much bigger guys. Absolutely fearless. And again, in that era, you never knew those guys were coming over and the adjustment they needed to not only play on the smaller ice surface, but to play in a very physical game. And listen, from day one, Alfie was absolutely fearless. And that's another reason why he got his ticket into the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, and I wanted to just, you know, go to the other part that we all know about Alfie, like the years in this town. He's made it his home. He's become a citizen. He's been an advocate for mental health. He's entrenched in this community. And you can't fake it for that long. He's a good person. He's a good guy. He's always been a good teammate. How quickly did you and the staff understand that about a kid at that point, that we got ourselves a good hockey player, but I think we got ourselves a great person here as well?
Well, again, those conversations you have during training camp, and listen, my memory's not that good, but I'm sure we had discussions with him about, do you think you're ready, and can you handle the travel, can you handle the games, can you handle the heavy hitting, and I'm sure he's looking at us with, what's the problem here, guys? That's me. That's how I play the game. So, it didn't take long to figure this guy is going to eventually, and it's probably a month into it, if that long, that we're saying at some point, this guy's the captain. He's going to take over this team only because of his work ethic and practice, the consistency at which he played the game, and how competitive he was night in and night out. And in practices, we weren't the most talented team, so we had to stress conditioning, we had to stress hard work, right? Mm. And Alfie led the team in all those, just great shape and just a great worker in practice.
How big of a battle was it to keep him on the roster to start the season? I know you hinted there a couple of times. We got to find a way to make sure that this guy's on the roster to start the season. Because as you said, I think he was ticketed for the minors because they didn't want to have to pay him an NHL salary.
If my old memory is right, I think he was making $50,000 in the minors and $250,000 with us in the NHL.
Yeah.
And I would think early in camp, you know, like you're getting... You're not getting arguments, but you're getting discussion from manager. Well, you know, it's early in camp. Let's see how he develops. Yeah, he looks good now, but let's see how he's looking at the end of training camp. But I'm pretty sure by the end of training camp, that discussion had stopped. But, you know, there's always guys that come in those first couple of days, they light it up and they look fantastic. And then as camp goes on, they wear down and everyone else picks up the pace and everyone else picks up the intensity. And all of a sudden you can say, okay, this guy's not quite ready. That certainly was never the case with Alfie. So, again, I'm convinced that the end, Randy and Fergie and everyone involved with that decision could see that, hey, this guy's got to start the season here. We've got to make this work. So it was easy for us at the start. And, again, you get those conversations. Well, maybe, you know, wait till the end of camp. But I'm pretty sure at the end of training camp there wasn't a whole lot of fighting to go on to keep him in Ottawa.
Speaking with Senators' original coach, Rick Bowness, here. So it's been 30 years, since the 92-93 season here. Wow is right, and how time flies, and it was such a, you know, it was a special time to have a team back here. Rick, I was like 17 years old at the time in the stands with my dad on opening night. I know how special it was, thinking back all that time ago, but it has been long enough, and this franchise has a history behind it. Can you speak to just what it means to have a Hall of Famer? Like, you know, this is the current modern-day Ottawa Senators, and there's somebody drafted, developed here, and what it means maybe for a franchise to have their very first player going to the Hall.
Well, it just means a lot, in it, because right now, there's a lot of, Pierre has done a great job with that team. There's a lot of great young talent there. And to Chuck Batherson, to name a few, we haven't played you for so long, but there's a lot of great, great talent there. And all of a sudden, they're looking at one of their own, and a guy that they all look up to, and they all heard about, they all, you know, read about him. They've heard him around the city, around the team, and all of a sudden he's in the Hall of Fame. Well, that just takes the reputation. It takes everything up at 5-6 other levels. So it certainly helps all those young guys that they're never, you're not going to get lost in Ottawa, right? And look how bad we were for a long time. You're not going to get lost. You play hard. You play the game the right way. You do it consistency. You take a lot of pride in your performance. You take a lot of pride in your consistency. You take a lot of pride in being a good teammate, and there's going to be good results down the road. So I think it's huge for the organization. I'm thrilled for Alfie. I'm thrilled for the organization. And, again, those young guys are going to feed off of that, and I think it's going to give them a big boost going into the season.
What's next for you?
Well, as of right now, man, I'm done. I've had a couple of teams phone and check what I want to do.
Yep.
There's been nothing of interest that would bring me back. So at this point, I'd say I'm 95% retired. If something comes along that really piques my interest, and obviously I'm going to listen because I am running out of time, and I get that. But at this point, I'm quite content to sit back and retire, and we'll see what else is out there. Maybe try some different things, consulting or whatever.
Yeah.
But again, if something comes along, and man, that sounds really good to me, then I'm wide open. But it hasn't happened yet, and we're just taking it day by day and enjoying being back home here in Halifax.
Would you be? You mentioned consulting, so. You've experienced everything there is to experience in the game. Would you be interested in doing something like along the lines of not being behind the bench, but maybe for a younger coach, be in a mentorship role, not behind the bench? You've done that a couple of times, or have you really narrowed it down to a really specific role that would interest you enough to leave? I'm sure your palatial estate in the Halifax area to leave and get involved again.
Yeah, it doesn't mean that. Yeah, I would do that. But, Judy and I were talking about that the other night, but the way I am, all of a sudden the competitive juices kick in. And you're sitting up in the press box. Okay, I got to get behind the bench again. But we're not there yet. And so, I've done a lot of that stuff, mentoring and helping younger coaches, but that has always been behind the bench and in between periods and everything else that you need to have your presence felt. I'm wide open to anything. And if that's to try that and see how it works, I know Daryl Sutter did it for a while in Anaheim. I'd give that a whirl.
Okay.
Again, I'm open to anything. But again, at this point, it's 95% sure I'm done. And which is fine. It's been a long run, right? So, and we have a grandson now, and that changes how you look at life a little bit. I like to spend a little more time with him.
For sure.
We'll see. Chris, again, I'm open to anything, but at this point, I'm quite content. If it's the end, it's the end.
How are the kids doing with their hockey careers?
Well, let's see. Kristen is in Nashville working with the Predators.
Yep.
She's their director of fan development and their minor hockey. She's loving it there. Ryan, as you know, is now director of pro scouting for the Pittsburgh Penguins, so he's moving up in that world. My son, Ricky, got fed up with dealing with hockey players on the media side. He said, Dad, I've had enough of these guys. So anyway, he's now working for an educational company in Denver, but his wife, Jody, is the vice president of ticket and suite sales for the Colorado Avalanche. They're pretty excited what's going on there. Yeah,
yep.
So Ryan had a cup party here in 2017 when Pittsburgh won it. Now, Jody and Ricky will have a cup party in Denver if she gets it. But, yeah, so
fantastic.
We've got everyone's involved with the NHL somewhere along the line. But now it's the old man that's out looking
at jeez. I have a sneaking suspicion that something's going to shake loose. Anyway, we'll see.
Well, we'll see. We'll see where it goes. I'm content.
And that's the most important thing, Rick, as we've talked about in the past. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. But I keep telling Judy if we leave, Judy's going to miss it more than me.
Good stuff. Well, we'll leave it there. Thanks a lot for your time. Afternoon for you. Enjoy the rest of your day and your summer in the Halifax area, yeah. Rick, and I really appreciate you coming on today.
Always a pleasure talking to you guys. CJ, hit it down the middle, pal, like you always do.
I will try, and we are going to get a couple of rounds at Cabot at some point. I think both of us now are at a point where our schedules have loosened up a little bit enough to maybe be able to make that happen.
Sounds good.
All right.
Look forward to it.
Good, me too.
Thanks, guys.
Bye.
There's Rick Bonus joining us on the Gabriel Pizza Hotline, the official pizza of the Ottawa Senators. And, I was just talking, towards the end there. For people that don't know, Rick Bonus, he's content and something comes his way, fine. It sounds like the more you ask, right, we kind of drag that out towards the end. I think there's a fire still there. He still wants to keep his hand in the game in some capacity, but at this stage of his life and everything that he's done and how long he's been in the game, he can do it on his own terms. And I think there will be teams that will be fine with that to have access, to all of his experience, because when he said, yeah, it's been a long run, well, for people that don't know, and I think many people do, nobody's had a longer one ever. Rick Bonus holds the NHL record for games behind a bench, period, full stop, head coach or assistant coach. And he's got so many family members still in the game as well. And we'll just say this, keep the name in mind, okay? I know JR mentioned something towards the end of TSN Mornings. There's some things starting to swirl around. And we'll just leave that there for now, okay? We'll take a break. And when we come back, we can get into some of the things that Rick had to say and reminisce about Alfie, or we could dive right back into, look at these text messages coming in. Can you tell that the action's starting to heat up around the league? The Fiala trade and playing the what-if game, so we'll dive back into that as well. Coming up at noon today, Farhan Lalji is going to join us here on the show. We'll talk about Vancouver fans are like, what's going on with Miller? What's going on with Besser? Does the Fiala trade affect any of that, especially with an RFA like Besser, who's due a huge qualifying offer? Can they get a deal done? So we'll talk to Farhan about that. We'll talk about the Sedins and Luongo going into the hall, and we'll talk about Nathan Rourke and the BC Lions in town taking on the Red Blacks tonight. We'll have it for you in TSN 1200. It's a 6 o'clock pregame show, 7:30 kickoff with AJ and Jeff on TSN 1200.
Now back to In the Box on TSN 1200.
All right, 11:25. In the Box continues on TSN 1200. Thanks to Rick Bonus. Thanks to CJ for setting that up. Goes way back with Rick, early days of the Sens. Interviewed Rick for the book. What's that? What's the name of that book again, CJ? Can I still buy that book somewhere? As I give you a free plug here, hey?
Absolutely. 100 Things Senators Fans Should Know and Do Before They Die. Available on Amazon and at your, reputable booksellers everywhere.
Only the reputable ones.
Of course.
The ones in disrepute wouldn't dare. You wouldn't dare have them be a part of that.
And there might be one guy selling them out of the trunk of his car.
One guy that looks like Santa.
Who could personalize it for you as well. Yeah.
That's right. And
cash,
you know what?
Cash only, please.
Cash only, and it might come, with a number 17 or whatever else is in the trunk as a bonus.
Yes, there is that.
You might get a little bit of a bonus. You know, like sometimes when you go to the LCBO and you buy whatever, it's like, oh, a little airplane bottle just attached to
a little
bit
value
extra.
Added, yes.
But CJ said, but I can't do this all day. He's like, Vince, ShamWow. All right, so we see your text coming in. Now, how am I going to put this here? I'm just going to read this text that came in. So Rick Bonus is going to be the new AGM in Ottawa, isn't he? That would be awesome, Eric in Cornwall. Eric, I'm just going to say this. There's a lot of stuff floating out there, and I know that our good friend JR is hearing a lot of the same things, and I've responded to somebody else on this on Twitter. I'm just going to say, not necessarily, okay? But I'm pretty certain things are percolating on the front office front, okay, with the Ottawa Senators. So we'll see what the rest of the day brings on that. Back into acquisitions. We are hoping, looking to have to pay Norris, guy that scores 35 goals in 65 games. Don't go on trees. Settle this group chat argument from Prince. Prince is in an argument on a group chat. We've all been in those.
Yep.
Okay. Who's being the biggest Richard, Prince, in your group chat? It can't be you. You're so positive. Who's being the Richard in this group chat? We need names on this. So, assuming, and then again, CJ, I guess when you was, I think you're going to try to go term. But it's been already been said that not everybody's going to go term
right
when they come. So could Norris be a shorter term D? I don't know. But this guy, all he did was just score goals. I'm Josh Norris. I'm healthy and in the lineup, and I'm scoring goals. That's what he did for this team. He had a tremendous season. And he's just at the beginning still of his career. He's going to get paid. He is deserved to get paid. It would behoove the Ottawa Senators to lock him up. He's a part of this core. So what is the number that's going to come in at? Because this is the most important contract that's sitting right in front of them that they have to get done now. You could talk about trying to get Stützle done a year out, and you'll try to pivot to that, you would think, later in the summer here, after the calendar flips to the new season in a couple of weeks. But you got to get Josh Norris done. You do not want this bleeding into camp like it did with Brady Tkachuk.
Right. Especially when you want to get off to a great start, as we've been talking about.
You got to get this done here.
Yeah.
So Prince is asking, settle the argument. What do you think the number is on an AAV? Now, granted, it would be a little bit different. Let's say if it was a shorter term deal than close to a max.
Yep.
Lay it out for us. What do you think?
I think if you're going max deal, it's going to be like 8, isn't it? Do you think they can get him at 8?
I think they could, but then again, I just don't know what Josh Norris and his and the agent
right
think and what's the dig in on that end of it, because I know the immediate thing is you point to Brady and what Brady got. But I think it's fairly, I think it's fairly easy to make the argument that, the Brady contract, there's so much more wrapped up in that because you knew he was going to be the captain. Brady Tkachuk, he's that kind of heartbeat kind of a player. He's a face of the franchise along with Thomas Chabot. When he's not scoring goals, he's being Brady still.
Yeah.
Like he's always touching a part of your game, even if he's not producing offensively. Already he's proven to be a great young captain, kind of the way he speaks about the team, the way he treats others around him, his teammates, everybody. He's kind of already as a young guy, he's that he gets it guy. So, and I know that contracts and term and money, it comes down to numbers, and I get all of that. But I think in his case, the money and term that Brady got in his contract, I don't think that was that high. Well, it wasn't, obviously, based on his numbers.
Right.
Entirely. And I can see that. I can. Now, with Josh Norris, he's probably going to be, well, he already has proven to be, but we'll see. I'm not going to sell Brady short here. I could see a world where Brady's a 40-goal guy. You know, as his power play gets better and better, and he's the net front guy as well. I could totally see a world where he could score like that. The thing about Josh Norris is very few guys that can score from distance when the goalie can see the puck, and he does that.
Yeah.
Like, that's so valuable. A guy that can... You don't have to be. And we had Alfie on the show earlier in the week, and he brought the point up about when the one-piece sticks came along. He said his shot got so much better. He says, and in his words, he said earlier this week, he says, I figured out that as my shot improved and I worked on my shot, the technology helped me as well. I didn't have to get right on top of the goalie to score.
Yep.
you know, and there's tremendous value in that. Like, there's still not many guys in the league that consistently do that. Josh Norris was showing he could be that kind of a guy. So that's my long answer. I think that's the number. I think it's right about there, and I don't think you have to go more than Brady.
Well, to get it and done. That was going to be my question to you, Matty. You can weigh in on this too. Like, I think about those old days with the Boston Bruins, right? And Ray Bourque was nobody was getting paid more than Ray Bourque, right? And there were some people in the Players Association who felt like him kind of enforcing an artificial cap that maybe he should have been. He should have, you know, been making more than he did to help other people around the league. Anyway, the reality was nobody was getting paid more than Ray Bourque in Boston. Is Brady Tkachuk the ceiling in Ottawa? I mean, he signed during a time when, you know, the pandemic, flat cap, projections were difficult to know exactly how much the market was going to move. But is Brady Tkachuk the de facto cap ceiling for an individual contract in Ottawa? Or should he? Should he be that?
I think in this day and age, you can't operate that way. And with the salary cap, with the way, and I mean, the NHL's not the NFL, but every time a star quarterback needs a new deal in the NFL, we have the new richest contract in the history of the NFL. And it's, I think it's just, and for all the reasons you laid out, the fact that it was signed during the flat cap in a pandemic, I think you're cutting off your nose to spite your face if you're the Ottawa Senators and you set that as the rule. I also think Brady Tkachuk would be all right not having the highest contract. But I think the way sports franchises work now and the way the NHL works with the salary cap, which is set to start rising again, I think that's dangerous to do, that you've signed a guy long-term. And it doesn't matter what happens around the NHL. No one's getting paid more than him. I think that's a dangerous slope to negotiate with.
Hi, Matty. I just want to say hello.
Hi, Steve.
Because, again, usually we've done this before and we did it again. We have a guest scheduled right away.
Uh-huh.
So we can't come on and say hi to you. We don't want to keep the guest waiting. But you're with us here the rest of the way.
Yeah, and if the guest was like Gord Wilson or Dean Brown, then maybe I'd be a little upset. But Rick Bonus? Yeah, you don't need to say hi to me. It's quite all right. Okay. How great was Rick, by the way? If you missed it, it's on our website, tsn1200.ca. Some good stuff in there with you guys and with Rick. I love hearing the early Alfie stories.
Yeah, well, that's where we're, like, I was in touch with CJ earlier in the week, but, you know, he was off being a diva playing the Hunt Club and stuff like that, so.
Yeah, I was there, too.
Yeah, great. Yeah. Awesome stuff, guys.
It was good.
Yeah, thanks, guys.
I saw CJ a couple times throughout the round. I think he was a hole behind us. Never hit into us. I don't think we ever slowed him down.
Yeah, me hitting into people's not really an issue, I don't think, at this point in my life.
But it was nice seeing CJ. It was nice being out at the Hunt, you know. It was nice.
So we're trying to do a bunch of stuff Alfie related, and we got a bunch of stuff done. But then CJ's with us today, and landed us a Rick Bonus. So awesome to get that perspective. There's so many good stories. You could just go on and on there from those early days with the Senators. And my only interjection is during that interview about that was like, come on, we know how bad those teams were, and. You know, the coaching staff, you know you're coaching an expansion team, but you come to that training camp, and it's been a few years of that now. They must have just been looking at each other. It's like, man, I hope we got some show me something here. We need more talent, okay? We need to, oh, look at this. Who's that guy? He's on a two-way? All right. No, we got to keep pushing with management and ownership on this. That, yeah, I know that there's not a lot of money around, but this is probably our best player. And then finally he said, what did he say? About a month into the season, they were thinking, this guy's going to be the captain of this team. It's a matter of time.
Yeah.
You know, just because of his, he's obviously talented, but it's on top of that, it's his work ethic. And Rick Bonus was right. You know, it was Daniel Alfredson was the type of guy that just led by the example every day. you know, during games you see it, but also we've told these stories a thousand times at practice. And if you have your best player, your best all-around player, the guy working that hard in practice every day, and then he's going out and doing it during games, it's just, it's pretty tough for anybody else in the team to not fall in line with that.
Yeah.
Either you do fall in line with that, or then you're just going to be pushed to the side. And that's why Daniel Alfredson deserves, like so many people deserve, a lot of credit for when the team started to get good and they turned it around. But on the ice, he deserves a ton of it, because it's fine for the coaches to say the right things and the GM and the ownership. You start the draft better and you bring in better players, and Jock did a heck of a job and all that, right? It still comes down to the players. That's your true leadership. You've got to have the right people, you know, at the top of the food chain in your lineup, leading the way, so that anybody that comes in as a player of the organization through draft, through trade, through whatever, they know what the standard is. And that was really the true value of Daniel Alfredson when he came over and won the Calder right away, and away you went, right?
Yep.
And you remember when, like, we could turn this whole show into this conversation, but like a big mistake was made when Randy Cunningworth was aging out, and he ended up finishing his career back in Buffalo. But Randy Cunningworth was a really good captain for this team at the right time as well, when they weren't very good.
That's a very good way to put it. Yep.
And you needed a pro that's had a good career. He'll do a little bit of everything for you. He would still fight. He would do, like, he was just a good captain at the right time, because the team wasn't turning the corner yet, but he was really good. And Daniel Alfredson credits him for showing him the ropes and all that. But the mistake was made, and players know. You were there. I was just starting my career in the media at the time, and you're right in the thick of it, CJ. When Alexei Yashin was named captain, existing players in the team, they knew that was the wrong guy. That was being pushed along up above the room.
I think because the announcement,
because he was a hell of a player. He was a true number one center, and he went on to be nominated for the Hart Trophy, but he was still the wrong guy to be captain of that team.
It was all political. Yep.
The guy that should have been the captain, it should have been longer than a 13-year run as captain of the Ottawa Senators. It should have started a couple of years prior.
Yeah.
Should have been about a 15-year run for Daniel Alfredson.
I feel like training camp was in Banff when they made the announcement. I have the feeling that we were, like, in the lobby of the hotel when the announcement was made, like right near the end of training camp. And Jacques Martin used to like those, you know, the team bonding things, right, in training camp. And I feel like they were starting out west, and training camp wrapped up in Banff, and that's when the announcement was made. And it was, for me, they had already had a number of contractual run-ins with Alexei Yashin at that point. And I really do think that the bestowing of the captaincy on Alexei Yashin at that time was almost like a last-ditch effort to try and salvage the relationship between the Yashin camp and the club. And I think, again, it speaks to the type of person that Daniel Alfredson was, that he would be much better dealing with the disappointment of not being captain than if the roles were reversed. And that this was kind of like, Alfie probably won't be happy, but it's not going to affect what Daniel Alfredson's going to do for this team. I don't know at that time if you could have said the same thing about Yashin. And so it was a very political move at the time. But you're right. Everybody who had any kind of idea what was going on with the internal dynamics of that team at the time knew that Daniel Alfredson was the guy that should be captain. And at the same time, you could understand why they made Alexei Yashin captain. And of course, it wound up being a flawed theory. And, you know, a couple of years later, he ended up being traded.
All right, we'll take a break, play a little catch-up here. Farhan Lalji is going to join us. It's going to be a mixed bag, fun conversation with Farhan. We're going to talk some Canucks, Hall of Fame stuff, trade rumors surrounding a couple of key players, but also big tee up with the Lions and the Red Blacks game tonight.
Can I jump in here? Victor Mete, obviously an Ottawa Senators connection here.
But, yeah, I was going to go to that next segment and read the whole statement.
Okay, let's do that then.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. I was just going to pivot to that. I just saw it just the same time you did.
Yeah.
So Victor Mete, who was on the World Junior team in 2018. Now, this was already kind of out there. Ken Campbell had done some sleuthing on this a few weeks ago, and had already said that Victor Mete was not at the event. But Victor Mete has tweeted out a statement on the Hockey Canada investigation. So we'll get to that coming up next on In the Box on TSN 1200.
This podcast is brought to you by Bodog.net.
Don't miss a chance to play at Bodog.net. When the odds are stacked against you, post-game tastes that much sweeter. Bodog.net, your source of free casino games, poker strategies, and live sports odds.
Now back to In the Box on TSN 1200.
Okay, so let's get into a Victor Mete statement here. Now, Victor Mete was a part of the 2018 Gold Medal World Junior Club, but Victor Mete was not present in 2018 at the golf tournament, the gala that was held in the London, Ontario area in June of 2018. In fact, he wasn't even in the country. So this is a statement from, well, soon to officially be former Sens defenseman. We already knew that Victor Mete would not be qualified. But this is what he just had to say within the last half hour on his Twitter feed. There has been a great deal of news coverage of a legal settlement between Hockey Canada and the complainant in a sexual assault lawsuit on the night of a gala event and a medal presentation ceremony held in June 2018 in London, Ontario. Since the eight men identified in the lawsuit have not been named, the incident has left an unfortunate cloud over every player who was on the Canadian team that had won gold medal at the World Junior Championship 6 months earlier in January of 2018. I believe it is important for me to state that I was not present at the gala event celebration when this appalling event occurred. At the time, I was away on vacation with my family and friends in Jamaica, and only learned the situation recently through media reports. I am deeply troubled by the reports of this incident, and should my help be requested by those investigating this matter, I will fully cooperate in any way I can. End quote. Statement from Victor Mete, releasing that within the last half hour. Now, as I said earlier, when this story, well, when Rick Westhead broke the story, a few others had started doing some digging and some reporting. Katie Strang has done some really good work, as usual, with The Athletic. And I know that Ken Campbell, previously long time with the Hockey News, he had been contacting some agents, and I knew that he put out a tweet a while back stating this, that Victor Mete wasn't in the country. But now you've got Victor Mete with his own statement confirming he was not a part of it, but he will cooperate in the investigation in any way possible. And if you have not heard, there are 2 days late next month, I believe it's the 27th and 28th of July, set aside where the subcommittee will once again, they've called back some of the previous names that have already spoken, like Scott Smith and Tom Rennie, and Dave Andrews was there on behalf of the Hockey Canada Foundation with the first go-around, but they want the report from Hedon Hutchison and maybe some lawyers from there as well, and some other parties involved to get to the bottom of this even more so with this, awful story that continues to unfold. Now, what's happened over the last few days, CJ, we're getting to the point where I think it's shorter to name the companies that are not taking money away from Hockey Canada at this point. Over the last 24 to 48 hours, I mean, we've had, Esso, TELUS, Tim Hortons, Canadian Tire, Scotiabank. Am I missing anybody? These are companies that have withdrawn all of their direct funding with Hockey Canada as it relates to the upcoming World Junior. Bauer is another one, or Andor had just kind of put Hockey Canada on notice as to what their relationship will be in the future. So now we're getting into, I think Chevrolet's a sponsor, right? Lordco's a sponsor, and Sealy. I don't think I've seen those names pop up yet. But this story is not going away, no. Nor it should. And now you're seeing what really in life kind of moves the needle, right? When money gets directly involved, now Hockey Canada's in a spot where they've had their federal funding frozen and pulled, and now they're losing money hand over fist from their big-time sponsors. And they've got to put a World Junior on coming up here in August. And there's another one coming up at Christmas time, not to mention all the other Hockey Canada events here as well. So this puts, I think, good pressure on the situation in that when you come back for those hearings in a month from now, in late July, you better have some really good answers and bring the information that you're asked to bring and have definitive plans in place of what you're going to do to improve the culture.
Yep.
And improve your own shop. Because one of the big things that came away from the previous hearings was when it was revealed, and I think it was Scott Smith that was answering the question at the time, like, how many of these kind of cases do you get, these allegations?
Mm-hmm.
And he said 2 to 3 a year over the last 6 years.
Yeah.
And I know that really took Sport Canada back, in particular Pascal Saint-Ange, and that's a big part of the next round of hearings. We need more information on that. You basically said with that answer that this is not a one-off situation in terms of people reporting unsavory incidents in relation to Hockey Canada across this country. This happens multiple times a year. We need more information on that. Or you're not getting your funding. And now the private sector has stepped up because who wants to be associated with something like this?
Yep.
Right. The whole point of this is you want to be a part of a brand. And Hockey Canada has been a good brand, right? Everybody, you know, gets behind all these international events. It's our national game, all of that here. Well, companies usually want to be a part of something like that, but they want no part of this. So it's not surprising that you're seeing all this funding being pulled.
No, and it's, you know, a reality now in the corporate world where you need to make sure that your company's values and the brands that your company chooses to align itself with, you have to make sure that those values are in line with your customers. Because, you know, we have seen much more, I'll call it consumer activism, in terms of calling out corporations for the type of investments that they might have, the culture that they create. And this was pointed out to me the other day that ESG, which is pretty much environmental, social, and governance, companies actually get now an ESG score in terms of how they handle these things. And the significance and importance of that is that how companies handle ESG issues, and right now you would have to say the ESG issues for Hockey Canada are an absolute disaster. But investors, lenders, in this instance, government agencies that fund you, customers, the whole, even your employees. This has become a very important and unavoidable factor in the way corporations are run now. And I am not surprised at all to be seeing all these companies disassociating themselves from Hockey Canada, because Hockey Canada right now is a disaster. This is about as big a corporate disaster as you can have facing Hockey Canada right now, particularly because It's hockey. It's Canada. And it's been viewed as what we would hope to be all that's good and great about our country, right? We identify with hockey as our number one sport. It's such a massive part of our cultural fabric here in Canada. Maybe not as much as it once was, as the makeup of our population changes. But it still occupies that pinnacle place in our country. And to me, this is going to be really interesting to see how Hockey Canada is going to try and recover from this. And again, going back to the governments and governance and their social profile. This is going to be very difficult for Hockey Canada to come back from. And I'm really intrigued to see what the approach is going to be. And indeed, if the people who are currently leading Hockey Canada are the ones under whose watch, on whose watch this all occurred, are even the people that should stay in charge and lead the changes. I think this is going to be seismic when it comes to hockey and the culture of hockey. Long time coming. Mm-hmm. A very long time coming. We've all heard stories over the course of our careers. And it's been a long time coming, but this ultimately for me is going to be seismic when it comes to hockey in our country.
Well, and you know what? I think it's also fair to point out, yes, we need change. We need more flashlights on everything. But to be fair, this isn't just a Hockey Canada, a hockey culture thing. If anybody's been following what's been going on with gymnastics in this country for the last number of months, and that story. And unfortunately, you know, we've got to do a better job with, you know, especially in organizations that are involving youth across the board. And this is another example of it. All right, we got to take a break. Coming up next, Farhan Lalji is going to join us. So we got some football talk, Lions, Red Blacks tonight. And we've got more NHL talk and some. We're talking a lot about what ifs and what's happening here in Ottawa. Well, they're doing the same thing in Vancouver. What's going on with JT Miller, Brock Besser, and others? And they had three new members. So Canucks, known as Canucks, going into the Hockey Hall of Fame this week. So talk to Farhan Lalji next on In the Box on TSN 1200.